You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today's episode of Locked On Vikings is brought to you by Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or maybe overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league. The League of Football Watchers. This football season is going to be a lot different. Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Personally, I am excited for any time I get a little bit more tape to dive into, like what we are going to do today. And Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day or any Locked On Vikings podcast. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. And today is our Rewatch Wednesday. I've got a really cool trick from Justin Jefferson I want to talk about. I want to talk about some of the defensive woes, what's happening there, what can be done to maybe fix it if you're interested in that. And I also want to talk about some of the coaching rumor stuff. You know, we talked a lot the last couple of days about whether or not to fire Mike Zimmer and stuff. And there was an article that came out on ESPN. It was a national article with all of the coaching carousel buzz from around the league. Things like saying, you know, Eric Bieniemy definitely going to get hired this year. Kind of weird that he wasn't last year. Whatever happened there isn't going to happen again. Maybe Josh McDaniels, maybe it's his time. Checking in on the status of guys like Adam Gase and Matt Patricia, who are kind of teetering on the edge of catastrophe week after week. And this is all like sourced reporting inside organizations. So they're asking people inside organizations, you know, hey, what are you hearing about? Like what's going on in the coaching carousel and stuff. And basically one thing that they mentioned was like, hey, everybody says that there's always a surprise every year, right? There's always a surprising coaching firing that you didn't see coming before. And then the authors of the article speculated that, hey, maybe that could be from Minnesota. They asked around. They said there's no indication that anyone, they said no indication from anyone reliable, quote unquote, that Zimmer is in any trouble. But they also kind of said, listen, you know, you're 1-5 and there's always a surprise. This could be the surprise. And I think they were pretty clear in that piece about what was speculation on their part and what was actually like reported vibes and reported like information from people that should be seen as an actual rumor. And the actual rumor is that there isn't really any intention right now for the Vikings to get rid of Mike Zimmer, which you might be surprised about, and that might not last all year, but at least at this current moment in this snapshot of the world, the Vikings don't seem to be in the mood of trying to move on. They're trying to endure the season, pick up the pieces, see what they can do for 2021, or maybe they still think that they can turn it around, right? Not till you're mathematically eliminated do NFL teams really tend to give up on that thing, even when it's really bleak and you're 1-5. If you're interested, the article also mentioned a few possible head coaching candidates, guys that are getting a lot more buzz for the openings that are already there and the ones that will open later. Guys like Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator in Tennessee, Brian Daboll in Buffalo, Brian Schottenheimer in Seattle, Greg Roman in Baltimore, Byron Leftwich in Tampa Bay. Exclusively offensive guys, and of course like Josh McDaniels and Eric Bieniemy, all exclusively offensive guys. So if the Vikings do want to shed Mike Zimmer and pick up an offensive coach, there sure are a lot of people available this year that they could go look at. But all of that is in the distant and still fairly hypothetical future. This isn't really a report on whether or not Mike Zimmer should be fired. I think that's much more of a concept to debate and talk about on a show like this. But in terms of where the Vikings are at right now, they seem to be approaching this with patience. And if they are staying patient right now, this is probably the cleanest opportunity to switch head coaches in the middle of the season. To me, that would make me speculate that they're probably not going to be firing anybody in the middle of the season. If they're 3-13, we talk about it again in January, but firing the coach is probably not something that's going to be on the table for the rest of the season, even if things go really poorly, just because if they were going to do it, they probably would have done it right now. Things can get a lot worse. Things can change a lot. So that's by no means a definitive thing. And again, there's always a surprise. This could kind of crop up out of nowhere. But right now, if they were to do it, it would certainly be out of nowhere. There's no bubbling tension. The volcano isn't filling up right now. But let's move on to the kind of in-depth analysis of the Falcons game. So I want to start with Justin Jefferson. And there's a stat that I've been tracking with the wide receivers that I think is the best like wide receiver production stat out there. It's yards per route run. Talked about it before on the show, but real quick, it's the receiving yards you have divided by the number of passing routes that you were, the number of passing play snaps that you've had. So basically it's yards per snap, but you throw out like run blocking plays or weird screen stuff. For example, Justin Jefferson has 168 receiving snaps. He has 537 yards. That is 3.2 yards per route run. And it leads the league by a mile among receivers who have taken over half of their team's offensive passing snaps. So you can think of it like among starting receivers, because sometimes there's a rotational guy that gets in there for two plays, gets one big play, and then it like throws the efficiency out of whack. There is Chase Claypool, who is currently outpacing him efficiency wise. He doesn't quite make that cutoff yet, but that's because he was kind of on the rocks for the first couple of weeks of the season, and eventually he's going to get that volume, and we'll see if he's like competing with Justin Jefferson. But right now those are like the two people who are leading the whole thing by like a lot, and I guess like Travis Fulgham is also kind of leading there, and he's been his own story over there in Philadelphia. But all of this is to say, of players who have kind of been consistently a part of their team's offense, Justin Jefferson has been the most productive by a ton. And there is a lot of reasons for that, right? And it's never down to just one thing. But there is one move that he's been relying on a lot that I want to talk about. I also want to talk about some of the coverage mistakes that have been happening with the Vikings, things that allowed for those breakaway touchdowns that we saw against Atlanta, and how it kind of mirrors some of the offensive line problems that they've been having. So we're going to get to all of that in just a second, so stick around. All right, so Justin Jefferson has been dusting people this year, game in and game out, right? He's getting open a ton. He's finding holes in zones. He's winning contested catches at a phenomenal clip. He's doing a lot of stuff really well. But there's one trick that he's been using quite a bit that he is responsible for a decent chunk of his success, and it's a way that he releases off the line. I've seen it called a Hezzy release. I'm sure it has other names elsewhere, but the Hezzy release, as at least like the sideline hustle called it, is kind of like a skip step, almost like a little hop step as your first step. It's a very slow step that is meant to go really, really sharply to the outside, usually. I think you can do it to the inside too. I think the principle is the same, but usually you see it to the outside. And essentially what you're doing is you're trying to release off of the line of scrimmage to the outside of somebody so you can get past them. This is a release against press coverage. It doesn't do anything against off. They're already 8 yards off of you. You don't have to worry about them jamming you at the line, right? This is to get around that. And it's kind of a slow, lofty step to buy yourself a little bit of time to process, because you're going to have to think when you do this. You take a really like sharp step to the outside, and then your shoulders are now no longer going to be aligned with the cornerback's shoulders. So that puts the cornerback, kind of puts the ball in his court. He either has to match your outside motion, or he has to stay patient and try not to take the bait. If he does take the bait and he goes and matches your outside motion, well, you've taken a very lackadaisical step. So you haven't created a lot of horizontal momentum. You've just taken a sharp angle. But because it's a lackadaisical step, it's really easy to cut back inside and release like violently to the inside with a nice little violent hip shake. And, you know, you can kind of get inside leverage back if you've forced the corner to go outside enough. Mohamed Sanu, in a video, I'll link some of the stuff. I discussed this on Twitter on Tuesday, and I'll link some of that in the show notes for you. But Mohamed Sanu talks about using this, and he says, you know, take them to deep water, take the cornerback to the deep end of the pool, kind of, and kind of force them so far out of the position that they want to be that they're going to drown if you go back inside, kind of force them into an uncomfortable position by taking its really sharp step outward. You want to cover a lot of ground, but not do so in a way where you have to like move too much horizontal. You don't want to have to stop too much horizontal momentum to get back to the inside. And then the other choice that the cornerback has is that they don't follow you to the outside, and then you just release to the outside like you were threatening to do. If they call your bluff, then they call your bluff. In the Atlanta game, Justin Jefferson actually faced corners that kind of chose both ways, and he was able to beat both ways. And it gets him, you know, a whole bunch of separation, makes a nice throwing window for Kirk Cousins. And this is a move that he's had a whole bunch of success with. There's stuff you can do as a cornerback if you know that, like, they rely on it too much. So eventually Justin Jefferson is going to have to kind of pull other tricks out of his hat. But for now, it's working phenomenally. I want to flip real quick to the other side of the ball, because I think the story of Atlanta, for me, after watching a lot of the tape, the story of that game for me was miscommunication. And honestly, a lot of the worst defensive plays that you see are going to come down to some form of miscommunication or another. So calling it miscommunication, it doesn't really absolve anybody. It doesn't really give you anything informative. So let me get a little more specific about it. There are way too many instances of a defensive player playing the wrong coverage. You see 10 guys playing one defensive play and one guy playing a different one. And that one guy is then going to be responsible for a huge play. And all Atlanta had to do was, like, figure out who messed up. You know, I said before the game, I said on the Friday show, my game plan for Atlanta is do stuff and hope they mess up. And it turned out that that was the Atlanta game plan against Minnesota. And it worked out great because the Vikings messed up. And if you ask me, I would always rather have somebody do the right play and execute it poorly than do the wrong play and execute it well, right? You can play the best man coverage ever, but if it was supposed to be zone coverage, you just blew something. Somebody's going to be wide open, and it's never, ever going to matter how good you played. And I think this is kind of the effect, if you want a more, like, mainstream way of describing it. This is losing Anthony Barr, starting two rookie corners, having all this turnover on the defense. This is kind of how it manifests itself. You know, when you hear people say, well, they got a whole bunch of new players, we'll see if everything, you know, works out the way it's supposed to, and if it's still that well-oiled machine, this is what it looks like when it's not a well-oiled machine. This is how that problem manifests itself and turns from a narrative into production when guys mess up like this. For example, there are a whole bunch of plays, and it actually happens really often with cover two man to the Vikings. When they're running cover two man, so that's two deep safeties and everybody else man-to-man on a guy, then there's always going to be one player, or way too often, not always, but way too often, there's going to be one player that is playing zone. For whatever reason, they thought it was zone, and they will take their man-to-man matchup and they'll try to pass it off to somebody who's man-to-man with someone else. And then that person just runs rampantly wide open and Matt Ryan hits them for a huge gain. That happened with Jeff Gladney once or twice. That happened with Todd Davis once. It was an utterly catastrophic trend that, like, that's how you get 40 points hung on you. And yeah, you can excuse it. Ah, you know, they're rookies. They're still learning the calls and stuff. But listen, man, it was week six. You're in your bye now. It's week seven and your team still doesn't know who they're supposed to cover. I think it's pretty fair to indict the coaches at this point, or to invite, you know, and we talked about this yesterday, or to indict the GM for putting the coaches in a position where they needed to bring rookies along with no preseason and rely on them. And now, lo and behold, that's kind of going like you thought it would go. And now their season is kaput because they couldn't figure out how to get a corner in the building. I still think I'd rather have this than just having corners, like, genuinely suck all the time. That's much harder to fix, like, long term. You know, short term, this is going to lead to much worse production and it's going to look a lot worse. But long term, it's going to be easier to fix this problem than if they're just bad. If you just have a corner that's bad and gets beat all the time, eventually, you know, you can shore up the production that causes, but it's harder to fix that. So I think I'd rather have it this way than that way. But honestly, I'd be open to having my mind changed about that. In the heart of hearts of optimism, the bye week is a perfect chance, especially now that we kind of figured out that maybe they're not going to talk about, like, firing Mike Zimmer or whatever. We probably would have heard this by now, right? They probably would have pulled that trigger. So they're not going to fire Zimmer over the bye week. He's going to be able to kind of try to get things together, and hopefully they can simplify the calls. I genuinely think there's an issue. This is a total, like, tinfoil theory just based on what I saw on the tape. I think there might be an issue where the words for cover two man sound like the words for cover two zone. Like, the terminology is too similar and people keep mishearing Eric Wilson or something like that. And that kind of brings me to the other part of this, is not having Anthony Barr, who's usually the green dot or the guy who actually gets the headset on the field to relay the calls from Coach Zimmer to everybody else. Anthony Barr was pretty good at that. You didn't get a lot of these miscommunications, except for a few patches here and there when things were changing. You didn't get a lot of miscommunications. In fact, the Viking Zimmer defenses were famous for how well they communicated. You know, you had Harrison Smith, the brains of the defense. You had Anthony Barr relaying everything. And that worked out really well. Now you have Eric Wilson relaying everything, and suddenly there's a whole bunch of miscommunications. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's exacerbated also by having all the rookies, but at some point you have to look and say, hey, Is it wise to put Eric Wilson in charge of this? Does he have it down? Is he messing things up? And maybe he isn't, right? You kind of have to be in the huddle to be able to answer that. And I certainly am not, so I can't answer that. But that's the question that I think needs to be posed. And if the answer is no, it's just rookies keep messing up the calls, then so be it. But if it isn't, if maybe things aren't getting relayed well enough, or maybe it's just he's just not articulating clearly enough and he says one word, it sounds like another, that's a pretty understandable problem, honestly. And it's a pretty easy one to fix. Just put the green dot on Eric Kendricks's helmet or maybe even Harrison Smith's. I would hope that they are at least considering a change like that, even if the consideration comes out with, no, he is doing fine. The problem is actually rooted over here and we don't need to change anything. But I do hope that they at least give it some thought. And something that I hope you give some thought is Built Bar. It's new, it's improved, it's back. These are the protein bar that taste like a candy bar. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. They come in 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new ones like caramel brownie, carrot cake, cookies and cream, and all your old favorites, salted caramel, mint brownie, a double chocolate, peanut butter brownie. These are things you don't really think you should be able to indulge in if you're trying to lose or maintain weight, but they're low calorie, they're low sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, and they're actually keto friendly, which is very nice if you're trying to be that kind of guy. For example, that new cookies and cream flavor, 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. So if you're interested in a delicious treat that you don't have to feel guilty about, you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off of your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. How often do you use excuses in the bedroom, like I had a long day of work or I'm just not feeling it? It isn't easy to talk about erectile dysfunction, but Roman makes it easy to discuss and treat ED. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you and find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship you real medicine with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/lockedon and you can complete an online visit. ED used to be really tough to talk about, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to getroman.com/lockedon and you can get up to $50 off of your first month of ED treatment. A free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/lockedon for $50 off of your first month of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/lockedon. All right, shall we wrap up this horror show? And this tape was a horror show. The Vikings were absolutely not the better team here. This was not a matter of catching the Falcons when they had some extra fired coach energy. No, I don't know if the Vikings could have beaten the Houston Roughnecks the way that they played on Sunday. And perhaps at the center of the horror show, the most horrifying part, the scene you go tell your friends to close their eyes during, was, it probably won't surprise you to learn, the offensive line. The offensive line had a ton of problems, and a lot of the problems actually mirror the ones that happened on the defense. A lot of this came down to communication. And like I echo the same sentiment with the defense. I would rather have an offensive lineman that gets beat but executes the right assignment and just executes it poorly than somebody who just doesn't get the right thing. Because a guy who tries to block and fails is always going to get at least a piece of them, right? But if you just block the wrong guy and you let that guy in on, you know, completely unchecked, it's always going to be worse than somebody who tried and just didn't get enough of him. And unfortunately, that was the case the most often with Ezra Cleveland, who had to fill in at right guard for Drew Samia. I didn't clock him a ton on game day, but that was just, I just didn't see it. It was pretty bad out there and I just kind of missed it on Sunday. So technique-wise, Ezra Cleveland has a similar problem to Drew Samia, which is oversetting. For example, let's say, you know, you start with the defensive tackle that you're supposed to block. Like there's a play where he was supposed to block Grady Jarrett, and Grady Jarrett was on his right, lined up over his right shoulder, but he was supposed to block Grady Jarrett to the left, which meant that you've got to get kind of across his face mask and block him to the left and kind of seal him off. This is a toss play to that side, so you don't necessarily have to get a great reach. You just have to seal him off and stop him from blowing it up in the first place. And he just set that way, and he got plenty of distance that way. He got way too much distance that way, and he actually ended up setting himself completely out of the way, and then Grady Jarrett could just run past him unimpeded because he set way too far. He played himself out of the gap that he was supposed to be creating. That is a technique issue that I think is pretty common of tackles that move inside to guard. They're used to having to cover way bigger spaces. You know, tackles have to get all the way out there. They have to cover, against edge rushers. They have to get these huge kick steps. Otherwise, these fast edge rushers are just going to get around them. They have to cover all this space and be really athletic. Guards need to fight in a phone booth. And when you go from one to the other, it makes sense to have an oversetting problem. We have the same thing with Drew Samia. He doesn't have the tackle thing, but he does have the same technique issue. Ends up a little bit more cartoonish. Especially in the Seattle game where he was slipping and sliding all over the field because it was rainy to boot, and then it looked like actually hilarious. But Ezra Cleveland is still suffering from this, and he's also suffering from just struggling with communication in the middle of a play. One of the hardest things about offensive line is in the middle of a play, you kind of have to still be all on the same wavelength, and you can't exactly, especially if it's loud. I guess that's not a thing this year, but if it's loud, you can't like talk to each other. You can't signal to each other. You're all trying to block. But imagine a scenario. Let's say that the left tackle, the left guard, and the center all have pass rushers coming at them. Let's say that the other team sends four players and three of them end up on Reef, Dakota Dozier, and Garrett Bradbury. And the other one comes in as an edge rusher going up against Brian O'Neill. And that leaves the right guard, in this case Ezra Cleveland, as the free man. Usually as the free man, you want to go look for work, right? You want to go chip somebody, knock somebody over, help somebody out with their block and make things easier. Don't just want to stand there. But one of the other responsibilities you might have as that free guy is, let's say, surprise the defense is throwing a delayed blitz at you. And let's say in addition to those three linemen, you know, you have Reef takes the edge rusher, Dakota Dozier takes one defensive tackle, Garrett Bradbury takes the other defensive tackle. Surprise, there's a linebacker coming and he's coming up between Reef and Dozier. Well, neither of those guys can take him, right? They're already occupied. So what you have to do is you have to pass guys down the line. Luckily, Ezra Cleveland is free, and unless you're Quentin Nelson, you can't exactly just like pop out of your gap and go grab the blitzing linebacker. Quentin Nelson did do that, and it's like one of the craziest things I've ever seen. So, you know, in lieu of that, you pass guys down the line. So Garrett Bradbury passes his defensive tackle to Ezra Cleveland, Dakota Dozier passes his guy to Garrett Bradbury, and then Dakota Dozier takes the blitzer himself. That is usually how blitz pickup in pass protection tends to go. And you have to like be able to, everybody needs to be on the same page about who's doing what, who's passing who off to who and when. Otherwise, you know, you end up with free rushers. And unfortunately, Ezra Cleveland, there was a sack where Ezra Cleveland was late to pick a guy up. And so Garrett Bradbury passes his guy down the line. Ezra Cleveland's too late to pick him up. And then that guy is just like free to go kill Kirk Cousins. A lot of this, too, is exacerbated by Kirk Cousins holding the ball. Now, we kind of ripped Kirk Cousins a lot already. I ripped him a lot on Twitter about these, too. But a lot of the problems that he's had this year, I think just kind of are him being slow to pull the trigger. He's not a slow processor. He never has been. He's been a quick, when you ask him to go through a progression, a 1-2-3 read or anything like that, he gets through that as quick as anybody in the league. And that's never really been his problem. But I do think he has a little bit, especially when he gets skittish, he's maybe thrown an interception and he's having trouble getting over it. And he's starting to overthink. I think he kind of buffers a little bit before, you know, the computer lags, before he actually fires the thing off, and that can lead to problems and you kind of miss your timing windows. That first interception at the L20 doesn't really reveal anything new about that. That one was as bad as we thought, but that was a play that was a deep to short, a long to short read. So that was a Yankee, which means Adam Thielen runs a deep post. Justin Jefferson runs not quite as deep over, which is just like you go 15 yards down the field and then go across the middle like that, or 10 yards or whatever it was. And then you have a couple of shallow options as checkdowns if things don't work out. So you start with the post. You start long and look at Adam Thielen. He sees the safety backing off. He pulls off of Adam Thielen. That's the read you're supposed to make. And Adam Thielen would end up kind of having position to maybe get that throw. And that's what I criticized on Monday. But I don't know if I want to be like, no, you should go back to your first read after the signal wasn't there. Like, I don't know if I would want to like instill that in him, because that's not good. Like, it would have been fruitful that time, but I don't know how fruitful it would be in other times. So I guess I would pull off of that a little bit, but he still shouldn't have thrown it to Justin Jefferson either. Justin Jefferson on that over was not open. There was a guy in your throwing lane. There was a throwing lane, but he was late to it. He didn't come to it. He would have had to come off that post a little bit too quickly to like get there. Like, that's one where you would have had to be really, really fast on your progression to actually catch that window. But I suppose, I mean, that's the split second thing that the quarterback position demands. And whether or not we think that it's like excusable for him to have been like that late to it, he still did have like an opportunity to throw that, and he didn't get there because he didn't get through the progression quickly enough. Whether or not that's reasonable to expect of him, that is what happened. And then he tried to, you know, squeeze it past Deion Jones, who was way too close to the play, way too close to Justin Jefferson, way too deep and way too in the throwing lane. And he just should not have forced that one. He admitted as much after the game. He had a couple of decent check down options. He probably should have just checked that one down or heaved it long to Adam Thielen in the first place as kind of a pseudo throwaway. But hey, maybe he makes a play. The second interception happened on a 3rd and 9 that they were trying to convert. So they had a trips formation to the left. That means that they had 3 receivers to the left. The guy on the farthest outside was Irv Smith. He went about 15 yards down the field and he ran an out. So a deep out. Then the other two were, I think, Rudolph and then Justin Jefferson ran curls right at the sticks. So they just ran a quick run up to the sticks, turn around, try to get a curl route. And you're trying to find holes in their zone. And I think that one you read inside out. So you start with the inside most receiver, innermost receiver. I think that was Kyle Rudolph. He wasn't there. The linebacker was kind of crashing in on him. And that usually means that Justin Jefferson would be there. But the corner, the outside corner who should be covering Irv Smith on that deep out route was actually crashing in on Justin Jefferson. And there was a window there, but Kirk Cousins didn't pull the trigger quickly enough. And he didn't get it there. He probably shouldn't have pulled the trigger on that one at all either, because the corner was passing Irv Smith off to a safety that was way too deep to handle the deep out that Irv Smith was running. If he had gone all the way out to Irv Smith and kind of continued in his progression, he would have seen that Irv Smith was way open, would have been able to hit him easy pitch and catch on the sideline for a converted first down. And the third interception, the ball just got hit out of his hand. That one's a little bit easier to analyze. There's not a lot of complexity to that. But there have been other times, you know, the Seattle interception with Kirk Cousins, the one to KJ Wright, where he snatched out of the air with one big long arm. He had a huge opportunity to throw that and he stared it down and he took like 6 steps too many to throw that. And he just isn't timing these well. He's progressing, he's seeing it, and he's deciding to pull the trigger on it. But for whatever reason, there is some hitch in his giddy up where he is not deciding to pull that trigger. That's the thing that needs to be fixed with Kirk Cousins. Personally, I think he's overthinking. I think he's thinking about too many things that can go wrong before he pulls the trigger. And then by the time he's done thinking about all the things that can go wrong, more things have come up that can go wrong because you've added a whole bunch of time for the defense to adapt to what you're about to do. So I think it's just a matter of overthinking. I think the guy's got to loosen up. Cousins has all the ability he needs to be really, really good at football. He just needs to trust that he can do it. And I think he can pull this out, but it doesn't help him that the offensive line's got guys in his face all the time. And it doesn't help him that, you know, you're still having miscommunications everywhere else on the team because for whatever reason, this team didn't get ready to play football at time. And now we're sitting at 1-5. Tomorrow on the show, I've got a former Vikings player. I'm not going to tell you who yet. It's a surprise, but got a former Vikings player coming on tomorrow. We are going to talk about some of his experiences and see if he can't help us brainstorm some ways to get the Vikings back on track. But in the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. I will see you all tomorrow with a very cool interview. Today's episode was brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watching. And as always, Skol.